Mormons can't wait to see what fun will they choose. This week in Mormons, you get a Joseph Smith style. With more and E up on the host, G up and out. How's the big bearded guy from Missouri?
Top of the morning to you, everyone. Welcome to This Week in Mormons. We've got clovers and stars, horseshoes.
Clovers and stars we've got. Why are we doing the Irish, Jeff?
I don't know.
What's about this place that brought us here?
You've been to Ireland. I haven't even been to Ireland.
So Ireland's whatever. Great.
Yeah.
I hear the cliffs, the Mower, and Boonratty Castle.
Do I regret that I never popped over to Ireland when I lived in Scotland for a year? Yes. Yes. As a matter of fact, I do. I do regret that. It never happened, okay?
What were you doing instead? Studying your books to get good letters?
I will say studying in quotes. But it turns out grad school is not very hard. So,
is that true? I feel like you're studying an awful lot.
So, because I was on, the British system, all lecture and then paper-based. All of my courses were, the entire grade was on one term paper, and that was it. So while it was useful to go to my workshops and seminars and read my text and be a part of it so I could be smart and know what I was doing, technically speaking, you could sign up for class, never go once, and if you wrote a good paper, you'd still get the A. If you want to...
I feel like that favors the paper writers like you and does not favor the schmoozers like me.
It does favor... Well, I think if you schmooze appropriately, the professor might be more lenient. You still have the human
element. It's not blind grading. He knows who it is.
Oh, yeah. They know who it is. So that made it, it made it a little harrowing because if you screw up the paper, you're hosed. There goes that course. Nothing else you can do about it. But at the same time, if you're a decent planner and can work on your papers and such, you do okay. I'd actually allot a week per paper. I do light research throughout term and then just kind of hunker down in the last couple of weeks and write them because I'm a bad procrastinator with paper writing.
Sure.
The point of this story is that I didn't think it was crazy time consuming doing the grad school thing. It was more about money and I didn't want to travel by myself. Because, I don't know, I didn't feel like hopping on a jet and flying to Dublin alone.
How is that not a thing you want to do? I did it.
I flew
from America, Jeff. Land
of the
free.
I would do it now. I would do it now and have no problem with it. I've traveled around a little bit by myself. I bummed around Slovenia on my own. It was delightful.
It is. It is interesting when you're like, when you realize that you don't really want to, you always want to see the world. You didn't want to do it alone. You kind of want to do it with a wife or something.
It's
of
fun
that
to
nature.
Share things. I mean, you've been to Tibet with your wife. That's a win. Right there.
Tibet was great. The Philippines, tremendous.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been to Germany and Denmark with my wife because she came with me on a work trip. So sort of a vacation.
Isn't that the same for everything we do? Everything's a work trip for us,
My thoughts are Denmark is very expensive, it turns out. So if you're going to go there when your company has to pay for your lodging and food. It makes it a lot easier.
Amsterdam was super expensive. It was crazy.
You spend much less money. And even the weekend. I mean, they paid for my hotels in Germany because I had to be somewhere. So it was great.
That's nice.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on TWIM this week. We're happy to be back. I guess it's our first show of the new year. As luck would have it, a lot of stuff has happened in the world of Mormonism that we'll get to in the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, quite a bit of stuff.
Yeah. But how you been, bud? How were the holidays?
Oh, it was good. Holidays were tremendous. We stuck around home here.
Yeah.
With the, we're just kind of being homebodies. I launched a new little project called Let's Make Art. I'm hustling the watercolors now.
Tell us more about it.
I did the quilting world for a while. Now I'm in the watercolor world, so come check it out.
Now, is it exclusively watercolors?
Yeah, it is. Well, now, watercolor and some acrylic gouache.
Would you mind? You might as well just plug it here, and I honestly don't even fully understand it. So explain the premise here.
All right. Thanks for asking, Jeff. The idea
Native
is we're doing these live paint-alongs. So you come... pull out your watercolor set Tuesday nights, 7:15 Central Time, and you just hop on our Facebook Live or YouTube Live with us, and you're going to paint along. We're all doing the same project, and so we've got a great instructor that sort of walks you through how to do it. It's all free.
So just you're taught and, how to do it. You're not just watching and trying to copy.
Yeah. So you're going along with somebody, but you got an instructor sort of explaining what to do and walking you through the next steps and keeping everybody corralled towards an end goal.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's surprisingly easy to do. That's the thing with watercolors is they're very forgiving. You're not being as it's just more about being artistic and creative, which is sort of my MO with the stuff that I work on. And so I don't know anything about watercolors. I jumped in. Now I am the resident Hamilton watercolor expert.
How long does a session last?
I don't know, about probably an hour or two.
Okay, so it's serious. Okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like the idea is you're going to come and hang out with us on Tuesdays and just be a part of that group, part of that community.
Is this what I have to do to maintain our friendship? Do I need to hop on this every Tuesday?
I would love it if you hopped on a Tuesday night.
Dude, I'm actually tempted because on the lower end of things, my little 2.5-year-old son has been getting into like watercoloring. He's got a little kit set from Ikea.
That'd be so good.
And he loves to paint, but I sit there with him and paint. Painting is like weirdly therapeutic. Oh, I sit there with some watercolors and I'm just like messing around with some kind of... some kind of Rothko-esque design, just messing around, and I'm like,
well, if somebody, it's great because if somebody sort of walks you through, like, oh, and if you do this, that's how you do a flower, and you're like, oh my gosh, I can do that.
I might have to start doing this for my own mental health.
You really should. And then we have a lot of people that are doing like, it's like a mother daughter thing, or two girlfriends get together in New York and do it. And like, I mean, it's just sort of a reason to get together, be a part of a community. So kind of cool. But that's been my labor of love for these last 4 months or so.
It took you 4 months to get somebody to paint on Facebook Live. I don't want to sound rude, Al, but it seems like it took less time to put that together.
Yeah, it's the whole... That website, man, I forgot. I've only started one thing from scratch that really took off, and doing it again. I was like, I feel like I should be better at this. But this is only my second time through. This is hard.
Does this mean we can once again try to tackle the TWIM website, which we were doing very well with there?
We had a launch even. No, I just need to do it on a Saturday, man. We just got to sit down and knock it out.
Now we got to re-index everything because of all the Light the World blogs we did and all that fun stuff. So, you know,
we had a lot going on, a lot.
Light the World was a cool thing. I'm glad we did that in December. That was, enjoyed that quite a bit. If you don't know what we're talking about, folks, head over to TWIM, look for like hashtag Light the World, search for it. And we had daily blogs to accompany the various challenges and scriptures associated with
it. They were fun, man. That was fun to write. Fun to be a part of.
Yeah, I did that quite a bit. Well, good deal, dude.
How are you, Jeff?
You know, we're well. I feel like I have something exciting to report, but I don't really. Christmas was great, though. My sister came into town. That was a lot of fun. It was a little bit of a bummer because my brother was also coming to town with his wife and kid, but their kid was sick, and we had to call it off.
Kids are the worst. What do I always say?
Yeah.
Kids are the worst.
It was too risky. Yeah, I don't know how it would have panned out, but it's a little hard when you're looking at a kid who's only a month or so old, and you're like, I don't
think. You're very reluctant to let him die. You haven't even blessed him yet.
No, I haven't. That's coming up. I invited you, but I know
you got the invitation.
I know you can't come, but I invited you. I just wanted you to know.
I appreciate the gesture.
So that was good, though. But it was a lot of fun to have Christmas, you know, some family in town. It was the first time we'd stayed here in D.C. for a long, like 5 years or so, I would guess. We almost always go to California for the holidays. So
you made your own traditions.
It was a good you do it because, you know, right now my mom's in China anyway, so I've got nothing in California but in-laws, and who wants that?
Is she loving China, your mother?
I think so. Barbara, sound off on this episode.
She can't listen to America.
She doesn't know how. I've taught her how to do this many times, and I know she doesn't know how. But
ExpressVPN, Barbara, that's what you need.
she has that one. She has the VPN, the good
one.
It's
a great VPN for China. It's a great.
She sets it on Japan all the time for some reason. I don't know why.
So everything, she's Google like, auto translates into Japan?
She's like, why doesn't Netflix work? I'm like, what, you're flipping VPN on LA? What are you doing? You crazy woman. So anyway, yeah, it's been good. New Year's been solid. I was super sick, though, starting on New Year's. I'm still kind of getting better. So
you sound great, Jeff. You're doing a great job.
The way to start the new year was being sequestered in my basement and literally not even seeing my kids for a couple of days so they wouldn't get ill. I was just hanging out in the basement with my laptop, and my wife would bring me food like a prisoner.
And you just played the Xbox? I believe that's what we call being 17.
I do not have an Xbox. My wife won't let me have one.
Jeff, we could play FIFA. I'll pay for your Xbox Live. You buy the Xbox.
But I will say this. I picked up Plant Coaster over the holidays, and it is excellent. I have enjoyed that. Yes, sir.
You've circumcented.
I have circumvented the law. Yes, I have. Yes,
well,
oh, and they gave us a calling, which I teased, I think, the last time we recorded, right?
What is this?
I said the hint was it's a calling I've had before.
Oh, go on. Music director.
Well, I wish. That'd be fun. No, they have called us once again to primary. Husband and wife. Teaching six-year-olds.
Oh, shoot. That reminds me. We got called to 12 and 13-year-olds.
They bumped you off temple prep?
Yeah. Well, we finished the run.
Okay. So youth Sunday school is probably kind of fun.
I don't know.
Yeah, they haven't done it yet. Primary's fun again. It's different because last time we were newlyweds and it was kind of fun to work on it together. Now instead we're trying to find time just to look at the lesson. And we have a 2-month-old to bring in there with us and hope he didn't pick up anything from all the children.
But that's not going to work, Jeff.
They're very sweet kids. It was nice to be with them on Sunday. It was great.
All right, so we got big Mormon news. We got a few things.
What? Things happened?
A number of things.
Oh, man. I thought
the first one, obviously, being the LDS Living missed the mark with the Me Too movement at the, what was it, the Grammys?
The Golden Globe Awards.
Golden Globes. And second to that, Russell M. Nelson is now our prophet. Those are the two Mormon themes that we really need to run with today.
Okay, take it there. What do you want to speak? Should we speak more about LDS Living sing Me Too?
No, we don't care about that.
Okay. The point was they didn't know what was up, and they just did an article about modest dresses.
They just thought it was like a record number of modest dresses. Turns out there was a movement against sexual harassment.
Yeah. So, good job, LDS Living. Every now and then we all we'll miss the horizon a little bit there. We just skim right off the atmosphere. It happens. Oh,
where's McKay Coppins when you need him? Wasn't he LDS Living?
No, McKay has never been LDS Living.
Well, where was he? He was. What LDS blog was he on?
I believe he was on. Did he write for just Church News when it was still a separate site?
No, he was because you know
he wrote for the Mormon Times.
There we go.
When it existed. Hey, everyone got to get their first gig out of college, you know.
Amen. Now he's at the Atlantic like a grown-up.
And he's doing tremendous things. He wrote a very thoughtful obituary for President Monson. We should back up to that. Because Monson on the 2nd of January, President Monson passed away from incidents due to age, as they say, and, which is, you know, he's 90, 91, 90. And so that happened. Just kind of happened out of nowhere. It was weird, too, because this was during my sequester. And I randomly woke up like at 2 a.m. and I happened to have gotten a text like 10 minutes before from one of my...
Yeah, you messaged me right then.
Yeah, from one of my church contacts. Like, hey, did you see the news? And the first thing I think is, oh, did President Monson die? And sure enough, he had. It destroyed barely been breaking. So it's kind of funny. I just kind of woke up and then there it was. Otherwise, I would have missed it entirely. And then I texted you and...
I was obviously still awake because I'm not 50.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have been at 9. So that was sad. I felt different about President Monson compared to like President Hinckley. I think I felt a little more loss when President Hinckley passed away compared to President Monson. I don't know. Does that resonate to it all?
Yeah, no, it does. It does. Well, I feel like President Hinckley was sort of there and with us to the end. And President Monson, I feel like for the last probably 3 or 4
That's
years,
true too.
we've been like waiting. We're sort of prepared. This wasn't a... Wasn't a car crash death where it's like a, you know, a more sudden sort of feeling, which honestly for me it kind of was with President Hinckley. I was really, it really took me by surprise. And with President Monson, I feel like we've been a little bit more prepared for it.
Yeah, I mean President Hinckley did slow down a little bit there. I mean, he was like 97 when he died. He slowed down, but he was still there speaking at conference, rapping his cane, doing his thing. And then
and President Monson, I mean, of course, it's sad to have somebody pass on. But, I mean, kind of the same with President Hinckley, where, you know, their wives have went a few years before them. You're excited. You're almost excited for them to graduate from this stage.
Yeah.
Get back with their family. Get you know, get on with their existence.
Well, I never thought about people of our generation or younger millennials and such, and how sort of different this is going forward. Because in my mind, I think of church leadership and Hinckley and Monson are just there, like, for my whole life.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd been in the first presidency together since 1985, and then particularly passed away in 2008. But they've both been around, and we put an article on TWIM kind of saying how, like, hey, with Monson passing away, this sort of presents a big moment for all of us who grew up in the 80s and 90s, because all of a sudden, both of them are gone. And now we're just sort of facing this unknown realm, especially because President Nelson is going to do great things, but he's also never been in the first presidency. So he's, in that sense, he's an unknown quantity as far as acting in a first presidency capacity, even though we've seen conference and we know how he
is. I think he'll be all right.
I mean, he'll probably be fine.
There's only 12 of them up there. They kind of know each other.
Here's the thing. President Nelson has a proclivity towards seeing things that he clearly thinks is very amusing. He likes to pause during his talks for things he thinks are cute and wait for the audience to kind of laugh and chuckle.
He's got the dad jokes on point for sure.
He's got them on point. He's not effortlessly funny as some other.
He doesn't have an ear wiggle like a Monson.
There's no ear wiggle. He can't work a room like Uchtdorf. You know,
Hinckley could have been a stand-up comic, man.
Exactly. So we're gonna get even more Nelson forced dad jokes.
It's funny because, like, my experience with Russell M. Nelson, President Nelson now, is when I was a missionary, he was over the Eastern European areas.
Oh, okay.
And so when we were working to get a stake over there in a temple, he was the one that was lobbying for it and, like, doing a lot of that work with our area presidency to make sure that happened. And then when I went back to see the temple dedicated, he was the one there. I think he actually did a dedication there. And
did he dedicate the Kyiv temple? Is that what you're saying?
I believe that's right. Let me look. Or he might have just been there with who dedicated.
I'll find it while you keep talking.
Temple. It was
dedicated by Thomas S. Monson.
Thomas
29th
S. Monson.
Of August 2010.
Yeah. He was there, and I believe with Elder Boyd K. Packer was the other one. Yeah. And so these guys roll in there, and the stories of him and his enthusiasm and his energy in trying to get this all together were sort of legendary to us as missionaries. I mean, there's one story of him, like, at 2 a.m, sprinting to a phone when they finally got approval to make the stake, calling our missionaries calling our area presidency and having them send a fax to every missionary in the area at like 2 a.m. That was like, we got the stake.
You have fax machines?
Dude, that was all we had. I tried so hard to hack that.
In your apartments, you had fax machines?
Yeah, we were in Eastern Europe, Jeff. We weren't like the hoity-toity Western Europe folk.
No, but we didn't have, like, any technology. I had a computer.
Yeah, we all had fax machines. It was a real thing.
That's kind of awesome.
And there were, like, very humorous faxes that would go around the mission, you must believe.
I'm sure there were a lot of, like, fax chain letters.
Oh, my gosh. They were great.
Now, did you... I don't want to digress, but I'm curious about this. I've never heard anybody having fax machines on their mission. Did you use them to, like, send in numbers or letters to the president, or did you still mail those normally? Or the fax machine, because the mail system was so unreliable, you faxed a lot of stuff in?
What we use, the fax machine was mainly numbers and stuff, so like all the reporting. I think it might have just been district leaders and stuff that had the fax machines.
Yeah.
But no, it's mainly numbers, and then like when you'd get announcements or letters to read, they would come through the fax, and then you'd get a backup paper letter like a few weeks later, because we wouldn't get mail, like physical mail, except for when the zone leaders would come out and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
So you go 3-5 weeks between stuff. It was intense.
That would be a bummer.
Yeah, no, it was delightful. And anyway, Elder Nelson, I feel like I got to know him maybe a little bit more than a lot of people, because he's not a very prominent figure in a lot of people. You know, when they think of who they know from the Quorum of the Twelve.
Yeah,
I don't feel like he's...
Everyone thinks of Elder Cook. So
for me, I think of Elder Holland.
Yep.
I think of Elder Bednar. I feel like I know those guys. They've actually come around. I've seen them at like firesides and things. Not Elder Nelson.
That's true. Yeah, I've been with a handful of the apostles in various stake meetings and things like that, or firesides. But yeah, Nelson, I've never, other than going to the conference center, I don't think I've ever seen Nelson in person in my life. Better get with it there, buddy. You gotta do some outreach.
Well,
before we move on from President Monson, there's one mini scandal I'd love to run by you, Al, and that was the New York Times obituary that just lit a fire under Mormons.
What happened?
The New York Times.
I didn't
catch
this.
Oh, sure. I'm sure you knew nothing about this. The New York Times. Do I have it here anymore? So, a lot of obituaries came out when President Monson passed away. You know, this happens. And the New York Times, though, wrote a much more matter-of-fact one, is what we will say. All right. In that, the headline, let's see if I can load it up here or not. Oh, well, here's the obituary. They actually got a response from the obituary editor because so many Mormons wrote in. And anyway, so what led off the New York Times obituary said, Thomas S. Monson, who was president of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints since 2008, enlarged the ranks of female missionaries, but rebuffed demands to ordain women as priests and refused to alter church opposition to same-sex marriage, died on Tuesday in his home. Excuse me. Facing vociferous demands to recognize same-sex marriage and weathering demonstrations at church headquarters by Mormon women pleading the right to be ordained priests, Mr. Monson did not bend.
Did they change the title, though? I thought the title was a little bit more inflammatory.
I think the title was normal.
Wasn't it?
I mean, the headline was fine. The headline, they just died, but it was the sub-headline and all that stuff. So this really upset a lot of Latter-day Saints. A whole lot of Mormons thought this was unfair. This went right.
They pointed to things like the complimentary treatment of Hugh Hefner and Fidel Castro.
Yes, Fidel Castro and all that stuff. Right now, I think
the New York Times is not known for being a critical obituary paper.
Well, I totally get it. This is why some people were thinking, you know, this doesn't help the whole mainstream media's out of touch narrative, right? Like, here you are loving Hugh Hefner for his radical approaches to the sexual revolution, and yet here's this dodgy old Monson. Because they didn't talk about widows or his folksy sense of humor or anything like that. But I was mixed on this. I get it why people were frustrated, but I think as Mormons, too often we want the regular media, the non-Mormon media, to cover us favorably in a Mormon context.
Well, it certainly feels good to have somebody cover you favorably.
Yeah, I mean, everyone likes that. But obviously with the New York Times, I think they were looking at, let's look at the main things that happened in the public sphere during Monson's tenure. And the things that do come up would pretty much be Prop 8 or women type stuff. Those were sort of big issues that came. Yes, they could have led off with stuff about like refugees and the greater work we did on that front.
Did they write an obituary for Spencer W. Kimball?
I don't remember. That was in 1985. So,
did they write obituaries for any of the other Mormon prophets?
I would assume so.
Do we have a sort of a tone? Because I feel like for social issues, the church has never been a bastion of sort of advancement. They're more of a lag follower.
So here's a fair one. Here's Gordon B. Hinckley's obituary in the New York Times. Gordon B. Hinckley, the president and prophet of the church, who led Mormonism through a period of global expansion, died Sunday at his home. The church announced his death. Mr. Hinckley spent 46 years in the church's top leadership ranks. He was the oldest church president in the church history. And if faith is relatively young, Mr. Hinckley's impact was formative. He traveled to 60 countries and dedicated 95.
So we didn't get a lot of temples. His leadership during times of social change and how he continued to oppress women. And
in his defense, that was also weren't the headline-y things during Hinckley's era. Hinckley's there for a long time, but Hinckley, I think, is best known for how he loved PR, worked really well with that. Managed to get the Winter Olympics in Salt Lake City in 2002. different circumstances. That was Hinckley? To some extent. Well, no, it wasn't just Hinckley, but obviously it was a boon to the church to have that.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting because there's another article by who's that guy, Matt, the one that just came out today-ish.
By Matthew Bowman.
Yeah,
yeah.
And he talks about President Monson, how President Monson sort of had this nostalgic view of the church, and that was most of his message was like a callback to being good people and good neighbors, true. And be a good part of the community. I mean, if you look at the messaging of President Monson, he led the church during a time where they were navigating some very I guess different issues than like the Hinckley era. But if you look at sort of, I don't know, I guess the legacy that he was trying to leave, I didn't get the sense that any of that was his intention, or any of the, like, women aren't counted here. No, like, I would not have taken that away from the Monson presidency.
Well, I wouldn't either. Well, the thing, though, is obviously the president, it's like any leader in any sort of organization, like, the buck stops there. It's true. President Monson really didn't speak out about any of these issues. It wasn't his jam. President Monson liked to, as you said, Al, just sort of reference a simpler time when he could sit there and, you know, tend to his birdhouse in the countryside.
Yeah.
And wear his plaid shirt and just kind of,
I mean, when I think of President Monson, nice, I think of the sort of notion that he was always there for the widows, you know.
Of course.
Called into service in the church at such a young age.
He was famously,
a lot of that kind of nostalgia.
Yeah. Famously late for...
That's what I think of.
He was famously late for meetings in the temple with the brethren because he'd stop by to see somebody. That is what we think of. We think sort of a man who wanted to call back to a simpler time. I would say that President Hinckley was a bit more cosmopolitan than President Monson.
Yeah.
And so
President Hinckley was on 60 Minutes. Is that enough of a reference?
It's true. President Monson was not much of one to. He didn't engage the media very much when you think about it. I mean, there was a press conference when he was announced the new first presidency. He wasn't out there doing much on that front. Really, that wasn't his jam. So I like the Bowman article you referenced because it talks about what to expect from President Nelson. How is he going to be different from President Monson in that same regard? And what many people assume is that Nelson is a bit more of a culture warrior, I guess I'd say, than Monson, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, President Monson didn't talk much about a lot of the stuff that he's getting pinned with at the New York Times. But these are things that Nelson weighs in on directly and has no problem doing so. So I'm curious to see what that's going to mean.
I'm really curious to see what sort of a prophet he is, because I feel like your role as a, for lack of a better term, maybe a foot soldier as an apostle in the Quorum of the Twelve. You know, there's topics to be covered, and you're sort of grabbing them and going. But your messaging as the prophet would likely be different than like picking some obscure issue and trying to articulate on it. Don't you think?
Yeah.
I don't think we have a precedent for a prophet grabbing like anything outside of faith, repentance, baptism, and gift of the Holy Ghost sort of topics.
Well, it depends. Well, that's
going back
for a while. That was more of President Monson's wheelhouse.
Into Hinckley or Ezra Taft Benson. I mean, Pride was like the banner talk from Benson.
Yeah.
And that mainly because it wasn't just read the Book of Mormon.
I feel like Hinckley would be a little more topical than President Monson was, at least.
Man, Hinckley was so middle of the road. Forgiveness, gratitude.
Yeah. Well, it's general conference, and you typically are speaking about general principles. It's just
I would be really interested if Elder Oaks got up and spoke about, you know, freedom of religion still, if that was still sort of his call to speak on that kind of a tenor. That'd be really interesting to me.
Should we talk about sort of the sky is falling mentality we've seen over the past couple of days? Just in general.
Go ahead.
So we've talked about President Nelson, but of course we haven't talked about the reorganization of the first presidency overall.
First time in 1,000 years.
Now, there was speculation about what it would mean because they said President Nelson organized a broadcast prior to the press conference to announce the new first presidency. And in my mind, I thought, why are you going to go to the hassle of all this stuff if you're just going to be like, and here I am with President's eyeing a nuke door anyway, right? I've been thinking about a lot of things to say about
this. So the expectation, of course, is that normally when a new prophet comes in, the first presidency stays the same for the last like 40 years, for real, yeah, right?
So there have only been two times essentially in the history of church that an existing counselor in the first presidency has not been retained by the next church president. Now, the most recent one was in 85 when Marion G. Romney was not kept in the first presidency. That, however, is widely attributed to his health. He was in such poor health that he couldn't even... He was next in line to run the church after Benson, actually. So he was president of the 12, but he couldn't even attend to that. So even though he was out of the first presidency, Howard W. Hunter was acting president of the 12, and Romney was essentially infirm the entire time. And that's widely understood to me to be the reason why he was not kept a first presidency. He just couldn't function anymore, and he died a couple years later. So then we go back to 1970, and this is the one people are looking at right now. Hubie Brown, who'd been a counselor to President McKay, was not kept in the first presidency of Joseph Fielding Smith. And most accounts point to the two of them not quite seeing eye to eye. Hugh Brown was famous for being a bit of a progressive in the church. He spoke out a lot about the church's positions, especially on blacks in the priesthood, things along those lines in that era. And most accounts have Joseph Fielding Smith not loving that. So that one, there's nothing official, but from what we can glean from history, it seems that Joseph Fielding Smith prayerfully, we'll say, but prayerfully said, I'm choosing different people. Holy Father, will you confirm this? That's how we typically do that, right?
Yeah.
So it was his choice, essentially, to say, I don't want Hubie Brown in my presidency. I'll confirm that with the Lord. There's always an element of choice involved. And people are looking to at this because President Uchtdorf was not kept in the first presidency.
President Uchtdorf is...
We don't rank anybody, but he's a pretty well-loved figure in the church, I would say. And I guess I have to call him Elder Uchtdorf now. So Elder Uchtdorf is now back in his line with the 12.
So you've caught us up here.
So, sorry, long story short. So the point is, much of the interwebs have been upset about this. And I can see it, and I can empathize with it. Now, and this is twofold. This is one, losing someone who is regarded by many as a big tent, more progressive type in the first presidency, and then ceding that seat to someone like Elder Oaks, whom I've found out many people fear, essentially. They see Nelson and Oaks as, presidents.
The Nelson Bash Oaks. Brothers.
Yeah. Quack. Yeah. Quite. They see them more as traditional hardliner go out there.
So two pieces to this before we compound it, right? I feel like people have forgotten that callings and releases happen as part of the culture of this church.
They do.
The mere fact that people would be aghast at a release that came at an appropriate time, right? This wasn't in the middle of a presidency. This wasn't some sort of a, you did something wrong, we're getting rid of you. This was, you know, during a pause in service when there's the whole first presidency is released and recalled, right? Even if Uchtdorf stayed in there, we would be resustaining them.
Yep.
So they were released and we shifted around, and Elder Nelson has a different first presidency, though it's different than what we've traditionally seen in the last 40 years. It was done completely in accordance with what we as Mormons know to be, you get called and you get released. When a bishop becomes a nursery leader, you know, you understand when they shed a few tears over the fact that they're not leading this congregation anymore.
I don't think we should fault anybody for being kind of bummed about it, because we take on different roles.
They can be beloved leaders, but when you see them in the nursery, your first thought shouldn't be, I can't believe he got the shaft like that. Yeah. Oh, man, he's going to be real pissed.
Elder Uchtdorf actually, on his own, posted a thing just tonight that said, hey, I've received a lot of feedback from a lot of you, like, concerned about me being out of the first presidency. And he said, I just want to know I'm fine. And he even had a smiley face and a heart.
I got to feel like if somebody sent a letter to Elder Uchtdorf and was like, hey, If you want an uprising, I'm with you. I mean, he's got to be like, how stupid. So also,
where's the change.org petition, Al? Where's
also,
the change?
Culturally, right? Like, I can appreciate. I don't know if this was a some sort of urban legend, but on my mission, I remember hearing about the Japanese bishop that left the church after he was released because culturally it felt like a demotion or, you know, something like that.
I had a bishop on my mission who left the church after he was released because he spent 8 years as bishop and was just fed up with everyone, all the backbiting of being bishop, and he didn't want to do church anymore afterwards. Like, yeah,
I mean, there's some of the cultural stuff, right? Being German, maybe there's sort of a... you might read it differently, but these guys, I mean, Elder Uchtdorf has been in the church a long time. You go up into you know, district presidents and you get released, and stake presidents and get released, and you go through this interaction enough. I promise you that there is nothing in him that's like, oh my gosh, I'm now just a special witness of Jesus Christ.
Now, and I can't speak for him at all. If he's experienced some feelings of just confusion and loss, like, I think that's normal and human. There's nothing wrong with that.
Be sad. He's been praying for over a specific role and specific people for the last decade almost. Like, you'll be sad for that mantle moving on.
Yeah, and that's completely understandable. And I get it why people look at this as a big deal because, yes, the one time this has happened for non-health issues was pretty clearly because the incoming prophet wasn't a huge fan of one of the existing counselors, so he could not.
I don't get why it's a big deal. I think it's appropriate, perhaps even a good reminder of you know, the fact that we don't earn callings in this church.
I have, but this does though go back. While everything is prayerfully done, this does go back to my initial point that obviously the prophet ponders and prays and chooses counselors and confirms it with the Lord. So, and that is his want.
It was weird at the press conference. If I may make a note.
What, you know, love fest between Dow and Russell?
Like, Elder Oaks looked like he'd swallowed the canary. Elder Eyring was slack-jawed the whole time. That guy didn't look anywhere but straight ahead. I was like, Eyring, you're not doing well.
President.
And then Elder Uchtdorf and like was a little bit, I mean, a little bit emotional over it. I think you mentioned Elder Holland reached out and sort of grabbed his hand, which I think would be, you know, for a quorum member that's having an emotional time, that's what you do.
Yeah. For a brief time.
That was the first time I'd ever seen Elder Oak smile, though, and he was smiling.
He's like, I've done it, finally. So for brief digression, yeah, President Eyring, now, I agree with you. There's just kind of sitting there agape through a lot of this.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting. And especially at the press conference, I felt like he seemed like he felt out of place. And if he did, and again, this is just me, but if he did, that I think that's also completely understandable because while he's been, this is his third first presidency at this point. Remember, he started all the way back with President Hinckley. He spent 10 years with President Monson and President Uchtdorf, the three of them kept doing their thing. And here he still is in the first presidency with two new faces, even though he worked alongside for a long time. It might be kind of surreal to be like, so here I am, and these are the guys I was with 2 weeks ago. This is a different jam.
Some very energetic folk. Yeah.
Now, another quick digression. I've got other things I want to.
You're pretty digressive.
I can't help it. The press conference, though, was a dumpster fire. Let's be honest. The press conference was not.
I didn't watch the press conference. I just watched the announcement. What happened at the press conference?
It was just. Okay, maybe dumpster fire is too strong. It was not the smoothest
press. A dumpster fire is how we describe Trump's campaign.
Okay, it was not Trump campaign-esque. So no dumpster fire. Maybe a rogue candle burning in the kitchen. I don't know. But either way, it was just, a lot of it seemed very, very stilted. I was surprised. President Oaks didn't quite seem as light on his feet when answering questions as he normally is. They had a number of questions from different outlets, of course. The guy from KSL had like a crazy softball one where he's just like, hey, what do you want to tell the youth of the church? And President Nelson looks at him. He's just like, I met your brother. He's a great guy. Now, good old Peg Fletcher Stack gets up there and asks questions about minorities and women in the church because of everything that's gone on in recent years and what they say to that. And then President Nelson, who I guess he's been in the same ward as the greater Stack family for a long time, But he goes in this very lengthy aside about how much he loves Peggy and her family and how he knows them. And then proceeds to mostly ignore her question, so much so that she actually chimes in and says, yes, but what about women? And the only response is, well, we love women. And
we have binders of women.
And talks about women's like roles in raising families, which is a divine thing we love. But when you've got someone asking that question, it's because there's an audience concerned about what the incoming administration is going to say and do about issues like that. And so when the only response is basically, you know, put on your apron and take care of the kids.
It is so different to consider this.
That's all.
When you say incoming administration, right? It's as though the church hasn't been under a sort of a course, like a divinely directed course since its inception, right? It's not really an administration. To the point of administration,
do they not work in the church administration building?
There are skills and talents of this prophet that will accentuate sort of things that are going on.
I've already seen two threats with President Nelson. Did you catch these yet?
What?
Two big things already he's leaning on. Go to the temple. He's touched on that both in the broadcast and in the press conference. So he's clearly concerned about temple attendance and living our covenants or keeping our covenants, being a covenant people. He's also mentioned that a couple of times. So I'm already seeing two themes that are going to be.
This feel pretty out. Safe.
Yeah. One other thing I would like to comment on though with the whole retentive counselors, what have you.
Yes.
Another thing to think about, folks, is while it has been the norm, we were facing a unique situation because Eyring and Dorff were junior apostles when they were both called to serve in the first presidency with President Monson, which doesn't typically happen. A first presidency member can come from a bishopric if they wanted to. It can come from anywhere. But because of that, there are many in front of them in the succession order, right? Now, if you'll work with me on this one. So let's say President Nelson would have kept both of them just as it was, right? He's 94 this year. He's pretty sprightly, but who knows how long President Nelson will be with us in mortality. Because of how far down they are, instead of one of them being like, you know, the president of the 12 and then assuming the presidency of the church, say President Nelson dies and President Oakes is still around. President Oakes becomes prophet. Is then he supposed to keep those two who still are not in succession and say, President Oakes passes away and somehow President Ballard is still around. Let's just say one's dying in order, right? Is Ballard then supposed to still keep these same two counselors, neither of whom is yet in succession to be the president of the church? It wouldn't be until you would then get to a President Holland when the order of succession would actually be Holland as church president, Eyring as president of the 12, and then Uchtdorf is the next one in succession. So because of how junior they are, to keep the council,
Monson was setting this up for a little lesson. This was the long con.
Yeah, what I'm saying is, to keep the councilors in place as the norm has been, this would have actually required potentially multiple church presidents just keeping and retaining the same councilors for a long time. So that was also sort of going against keeping both of them in the same place, because it would almost look weird if we went through multiple church presidents and you just had those two just hanging out. Here we are the whole time.
Savage.
I do feel for people who are frustrated with this and maybe have a little trepidation about it. I get it. I also think that why would you put your activity and faith in the church and whether Elder Oaks in the first presidency or not? I mean, great. There he is.
No sane person is putting their activity based on who the first presidency was.
I hope not, but I guarantee there are people who have been on the bubble and see the removal of Elder Uchtdorf as some kind of a slight, and it makes them feel like they should start looking on their way out. I can guarantee you that's happened over the past two days.
That's so asinine to me.
I don't get it either. I don't think that is the right course, but I guarantee it's happened. And I've seen a lot of stuff over the past few days.
By their fruits. Let's watch their fruits here. I know you really liked the Silver Fox.
Who doesn't?
I feel like this is sort of a favorite missionary sort of thing. And the missionary, he didn't even get emergency transferred. He just got transferred, and people are real bummed out.
Yeah.
And there's some people that he may have baptized that aren't coming back to church now. I mean, it's the gospel of Jesus Christ, people. This is what we are discussing. And Uchtdorf is pro-Jesus. So is Oakes. So is Nelson. So is Iron.
And that was a good reminder from Elder Uchtdorf, who said, hey, my goal is to serve Jesus Christ. And so is everyone else's. And so should all of our goal together to do that. And to lift where we stand and get that done. And I hope we do that. So I just want to be clear. I understand people's trepidation. I get it because, Nelson, a lot of accounts point to President Nelson being the one
The boat, people.
President Nelson, most accounts have him actually kind of being the one who sort of pushed through the November policy. So there are people who have issue with that. President Oakes has said things like how the church never apologizes, never will, for things like blacks in the priesthood. So this is why people are a little bit agitated. But these are not reasons to jump ship, folks. Just wait
and
see.
What world do we live in where it's not the German that says the church will never apologize and it never will?
And if I can add one thing, a good example, though, when he was elder, Ezra Taft Benson was a famously hardline conservative, right? These caused a lot of issues during the McKay administration. But as church president, President Benson was a very different person. And we don't know what the future holds, but I do know that serving in different roles can moderate and change the way you approach certain tasks when you have different mantles placed upon you. And President Nelson's President Benson's a perfect example of that. He was all about pride in the Book of Mormon as church president. He wasn't about the John Birch Society or anything. He was just trying to make us be better people. So don't freak out, folks. Everything's going to be okay. The church is still here. The gospel is real. It's all happening.
It's good. It's going to be good.
It's going to be fine. I'm curious who's going to be in the 12, though. Wait till April. Oh, well.
Speaking of here to serve Jesus, Mitt Romney is probably going to run for the Senate, and Ann Romney says good.
Okay. Now, the question is, though, will he keep up anti-Trump antics? Or because as the junior senator from Utah, will he kind of be forced to toe the party line?
I say you're in there. Go for it. He's got nothing to prove to nobody.
Just why not, right? Party. Now, you would think he'd have an easier time because we have this narrative of Mormons not really loving Trump very much, right? I think we've heard about this for the past while.
Well, sure.
But not so according to Gallup, which just released a poll that said that among religious groups, Mormons have the best favorability rating of Trump, where 61% of Mormons surveyed approve of Donald Trump, which this just kind of flies in the face of all this Mormons.
I feel like they just talk to old people, because all the old people Mormons I know do love Trump.
That's fair.
If you are over 70, you are a huge Trump fan. I don't get it. But maybe the golf, maybe the hair. But anybody younger, I feel like, is like, no. Maybe we're reverse lying on the exit polls. What if now they're just trying to get in fights, and they're like, yeah, I love Trump. What up?
We're just going to mix it up. It's fascinating data, though. I don't know. I'm with you. I don't have any.
Hey, data. Garbage in, garbage out, Jeff. You know what I'm saying?
I have a lot of friends here in D.C. who are Republicans who work in politics, and just none of them can stand Trump. I don't know. It's very strange.
Yeah, I don't know anybody either.
What's
the background of this poll? Have we dug in? How big is this sample size?
Look it up. It's representative. I know they did it deliberately. The science behind it is sound.
Hold on. All right. Results for this poll. A random sample of only 120,000 adults. That is enough. Okay.
Let's see. They've got it's plus or minus 3 points for the margin of error for the Mormon part, which is fair. That's
yeah. So let's call it 58%, not 61. Okay. All right. That just feels better.
You're happier about it.
But are you all right? You need a water or something?
I told you, man. I'm getting over something.
You sound bad. Like you're dying.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Wait, so one aside, with the transition stuff, Mission Calls went out on a new letterhead. It'd be cool to get one of these.
Yeah, because it's like 1 week of the next X number of years where this will happen. So,
what'd they say? 1,000 calls went out to missionaries with the letterhead of the Quorum of the 12 and not the First Presidency.
I think that is fascinating, and it's such a great visual of how work goes forward, how the promise is contained in Doctrine and Covenants about, co-equal quorum, who has keys and this and that. You carry on.
During President Monson's 10-year tenure, he
His tenure. Yeah.
He called 410,000 full-time missionaries.
Isn't that crazy?
That's a lot of dudes and chicks.
And that's something he will forever be known for, I hope, is the lowering of the mission age. I remember vividly when that happened. We were... Sorry, there I go again. I remember that, dude, because I remember we were covering conference on Twitter. And I was proctoring an SAT, so I was getting late to conference. And you were texting me like, dude, are you seeing this? And I had no idea.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's cool stuff. I hope President Monson will be known for that. And I hope he will be known for our very intensive push into helping the less fortunate. I have often been surprised how many people, well, many people don't even know what the three pillars of the church were, the threefold mission of the church. And then on top of that, I don't even know that President Monson officially added a fourth mission to the church. Like, I take this for granted and assume everyone knows what this stuff is, but people don't. So
we forget how quickly we forget.
So just as a quick refresher, the original three were perfecting the saints, redeeming the dead, proclaiming the gospel. And President Monson added helping the poor to that. That was a hallmark of his administration. Not to say administration, I'm sorry, but it's what it is. Well. Some other quick mentions. The Salt Lake Tribune finally ran a story on mission lingo. I'm sure they did this on your mission, Al. How, you know, you're dying when you're going home. You kill a companion who's going home.
Right? You're a father of a trainee.
Yep. I had hijo. I was very excited when my hijo trained, because then I said I was a granddaddy, you know, things like that. It's just, yeah.
The trip it's real sweet.
It's flipping adorable.
That's the hard-hitting news.
It's forking and adorable.
Interesting, too, Matt Holland, who we had fingered for, there's some politics that were going to happen with him. He actually got called to be a mission president in North Carolina, so he's subbing out for 3 years.
Well, you could like be the president of UVU, or you could just go be a mission president in North Carolina. I feel like he should phone that one in, like, to his dad and be like, hey, maybe you give me, you know, I don't know, Croatia?
Let me go someplace cool. North Carolina, we've been to North Carolina, and it was a great trip. Yeah, you go antiquing? It was so fun.
Over there in Southport. Here's the thing, folks. If we could talk about the North Carolina-South Carolina border areas for a second, there's a noticeable difference in class when you cross the state line between South Carolina and North Carolina along the beach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, trash? A noticeable difference in trash?
In class. Though, probably in trash. I mean,
when you get to Myrtle Beach, it is like people, they go there on vacation with garbage bags full of their own clothes.
Yes. The ocean is so nice in Myrtle Beach because of the urine of hillbillies, everyone.
the hill folk, we call
just,
them.
Just fling the ocean, and that's why it's so warm. A couple other things to note. The Genesis Group, which is a church-run group for African-Americans, had a
leadership. It's church-run? Is it really?
Yeah, it's officially an auxiliary organization of the church.
No, I'll be darned.
Anyway, they had a leadership change, kind of a big deal there. Another mention, I guess on The Amazing Race, there was a... some interesting
women. We called this, man. This was going to be our idea.
Well, they just got eliminated last week. Anyway, there is an LDS set of friends, two women who do goat yoga, whatever the heck that means. And,
interesting. That's going to get picked for sure.
The point of it, though, is they talked about the difficulty in keeping their standard if they faced anything, which on the very first episode of this season, they were supposed to drink an Icelandic spirit after completing a task.
Some scotch or something.
I'm guessing they just kind of tossed it aside because drinking it was not the task itself. But that would be a tough thing to face.
No, so they rode the zip line and they either had to drink that or instead they let him drink a shot of cod liver.
Yeah. I remember on one season of The Amazing Race of Show Love, there were two Muslim contestants and they said, we're going to observe our faith on the race, even meaning the call to prayer. So they actually stopped mid-challenges and rolled out their carpets and did prayers and stuff. It was very interesting, and I liked their dedication to their faith.
Yeah,
they
also let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works.
Yes, they also got eliminated on the very first leg. So it turns out
it's because they were praying instead of racing.
It turns out being religious is a detriment to a race scenario.
It's never going
to
work.
Yeah. So
Idaho Falls Church got some. It's a hate crime. Somebody spray painted "God is dead."
It's not very nice.
I believe from that hit movie of a few years ago, or Nietzsche. one of those was being quoted. They said, God is dead. And
wow, bringing the Nietzsche reference to TWIM. Look at you.
Hey, somebody said it.
Well, next week, tune in. We talk about Immanuel Kant, everyone.
All right, Jeff, people, it's always a delight. We just want to have a steady hand here as we say, don't worry, Elder Uchtdorf is okay. Elder Eyring is the one we have to be worried about signing help from that stand. But Elder Uchtdorf is okay. We love you. We're excited for this next era. Email us your thoughts and comments.
Can't you just see like President Oak just smothering Eyring with like just his administrative passion? He's just like, who is
this guy?
You can
totally see Eyring up there just being like, get me out of here.
He's gonna be like, everyone predicted I was gonna be the one to get released. Not Dieter. It was supposed to be
me. I was the good son.
Go find on social media, folks. Hey, if you want to hang out with us, we even have an internal TWIM group if you want to help write things and do things.
I don't even go to that anymore.
Well,
don't
bother. You could try. Go to patreon.com/thisweekinmormons. You can pledge. Thank you to those of you who do so. You are now covering our server fees. So that's...
What? That's kind of cool.
Well, at least for Amazon. You're covering our hosting fees for the podcasts themselves.
That's really sweet.
That's very great of all of you. Much appreciated. It is not tax deductible as far as I know, but thank you. And even if it were, it probably wouldn't be anymore with a new tax bill. Nothing's deductible anymore, I guess, right? So who cares? Just free money for everyone all around.
Treats my business fine. I have such mixed feelings about this. I get a great cut.
I don't know what's happening now.
I want to be mad about it, but it's actually it's not the worst.
All right, folks. Y'all have a good week. Keep the faith. Exciting times coming around. We'll be back at some point. And anyway.
Be wealthy, be holy, be witty.
And I'll leave it at that, folks. TWIM is out. Hold on if you've forgotten how it feels to feel the light. Hold on if you're half crazy, thinking you're the only one.